Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
A cold front is on its way, and it may bring some severe storms to our northern counties. I'll show you what to expect where you are.
Plus, finding solutions to prevent energy infrastructure attacks from happening again. What we are hearing from lawmakers.
And not only are Americans bracing for student loan repayments to resume, so are businesses. What this could mean for the economy.
That cold front will cross our area this evening, bringing a few scattered storms. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Michelle McConaughey in for Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. You are looking live at the DBAP this afternoon. A cold front will cross our area this evening. Again, like Jeff said, bringing a couple scattered storms.
Yeah, part of the viewing area is under a level one risk for severe storms. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a look at the risk area. Elizabeth?
We've had a lot of severe storms in the last, this is, say, third day in a row down across the deep south. This is not what's lifting up into our area, however. We're going to see this cold front up to the north and west starting to slide down across our area this afternoon. Right now, everything's looking quiet. This is a look at dual Doppler 5000 radar. Nothing starting to pop up just yet, but it's likely to happen in the next couple of hours, sometime between 1 and 3 o'clock. We'll likely see some storms develop. This is noon, and you can see things are pretty quiet here on the model. But by 3 o'clock, there are a few isolated storms that develop. We're going to see a cold front that's to our north that's going to drop down across our area late afternoon and evening. Here's 5 o'clock, and you can see the coverage of storms is pretty limited here at 5 o'clock. But you can see that really we're trending most of these up near the Virginia line. One or two of those could see winds at 58 to 60 miles per hour, which could cause some tree damage. We could also see some large hail, quarter size or larger, which would be considered severe as well. Once we get past sunset, most of this ends up dying off. So again, our level one severe threat is going to range from Person County all the way through Halifax and Northampton County. Of course, it includes Mecklenburg County, Virginia, just all those counties that border the Virginia line. Elsewhere, we may see a few isolated showers and thunderstorms. We're going to give it a 40% chance. That means that over half of us are not likely to see storms today. The weekend is looking nice and dry, but we do have a wet pattern that's on the way. We'll talk about when you'll see that coming up.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. Happening now, federal lawmakers are on the ground in Pinehurst. They're taking a closer look at the December attack on the Moore County power grid. That attack plunged tens of thousands into the dark for almost a week. 6 months later, no arrests have been made. WRAL's Eric Miller was there for the meeting that just wrapped up. Eric, what are you hearing from lawmakers?
I'm Michelle. Those 10 lawmakers were part of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. They wrapped up their hearing here in just the last 20 minutes. They're looking for lessons here in Moore County, trying to protect the nation's power grid. Now, they started off their day touring the site of the Moore County attack. They then sat down and started pressing officials, including with Duke Energy and North Carolina emergency managers, on what's being done to try to keep the grid safe. Those officials say they're working to harden critical infrastructure. That means more cameras, more security, and making sure they can replace important equipment faster. Still, nobody has been arrested in the attack here in Moore County. That was especially concerning to Representative Richard Hudson, who represents this area in Congress.
To the folks who perpetrated this, you did not get away with this. We're coming for you, and we're going to find you, and we're going to hold you accountable.
Still, Representative Hudson acknowledged there's a long way to go in this case. He said law enforcement, they still haven't identified who might be behind this attack. He also criticized the FBI's response here as well. We heard similar criticisms from Sheriff Fields here in Moore County. There's a lot to unpack here, a lot of different elements to this story. We'll have more throughout the afternoon and evening. Michelle?
All right. Eric Miller live in Pinehurst. Thanks, Eric.
And breaking here in the WRAL Live Center, within the last 45 minutes, the Justice Department released a blistering report about the Minneapolis Police Department and the conduct of some of its officers. And I emphasize some because U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said that his investigators witnessed many police officers in Minneapolis conducting their work with professionalism, courage, and respect. Now, the DOG opened this investigation after the murder of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Listen to how U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland summed up the findings in this report.
Specifically, we found that MPD and the city of Minneapolis engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, unlawfully discriminating against Black and Native American people in enforcement activities, violating the rights of people engaged in protected speech, and discriminating against people with behavioral disabilities and responding to them when responding to them in crisis.
Well, the Attorney General says some changes have already been made within the Minneapolis Police Department, including getting rid of neck restraints and banning no-knock warrants. The DOG, the Minneapolis Police Department, and the city and the DOJ have signed a consent decree, which means that they will continue working together to improve policing in Minneapolis.
All right, Ken, thank you for that. History on Capitol Hill as the U.S. Senate confirms the first Muslim woman to serve as a federal judge. Nusrat Chaudhry is the first Bangladeshi-American to join the federal judiciary. President Biden nominated the civil rights attorney in January of last year. It was part of his promise to ensure the nation's courts reflect the diversity of the country. Chaudhry will join the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of New York. And Vice President Kamala Harris will be in North Carolina next week. The visit marks 1 year since the Supreme Court ended the constitutional right to abortion care nationwide. It will also come just days before new abortion restrictions are set to go into effect here in North Carolina. Vice President Harris is scheduled to speak in Charlotte on Saturday, June 24th.
Fayetteville police identified the man who was killed during what investigators call a family altercation. Police say 32-year-old Gerald Vieira died. This happened on Lake Avenue yesterday. A friend took Vieira to the VA Medical Center for treatment since it was the closest hospital. The driver stopped outside the gates of the medical center to wait for emergency personnel, but Vieira died during that time. No word of any arrests as this investigation continues.
And breaking here in the WRL Live Center, we're getting word that Michael Jordan finalizing plans to sell his majority stakehold in the Charlotte Hornets. Jordan has been in talks with Hornets minority owner Gabe Plotkin and Atlanta Hawks minority owner Rick Schnall for quite some time now. The deal is reportedly valued at about $3 billion. The transaction ends Jordan's 13-year run as majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets. Jordan isn't going away immediately, though. He will continue overseeing basketball operations through next Thursday's NBA draft and the start of free agency July 1st. Of course, the NBA still has to vet and approve this transaction, but that ends Michael Jordan's tenure as the majority owner of the Charlotte Hornets.
That will be the end of an era, Ken. Mm-hmm. Thanks. While millions of students are bracing for the return of their student loan repayments, retailers are bracing for impact as well. When 45 million Americans start repaying their loans, the hit to the economy is expected to be far worse than when COVID benefits ran out.
As the country waits for a momentous Supreme Court decision on student loan forgiveness, several borrowers are already bracing for hits to their budget. In a few months, millions could be making payments for the first time in 3 years.
Inflation has caused us to be in a situation where paying back a loan 3 years ago, 4 years ago, like I was doing, is a little more difficult for me these days.
Ending the COVID pandemic pause on payments was a stipulation in the bipartisan debt ceiling deal. It could have a ripple effect on the economy as younger adults curb spending. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau warns as many as 1 in 5 borrowers are on shaky financial ground, and that could make repayment harder.
There's data that show that 10 to 12 years after having graduated from college, the average African-American woman owes more on her student loan debt than she did when she first graduated.
But opponents argue the payment pause is hurting everyone else's wallets.
Because payments that would otherwise have gone to student loans are instead being pushed into the economy. They're increasing consumer spending, and consumer spending is one of the major factors contributing to inflation right now.
And several Republicans say the president doesn't have the power to unilaterally cancel student loans without congressional approval.
This is not about student loans. This is about what does the United States Constitution say?
That was Madeline Rivera reporting. Student loan interest will resume September 1st, and payments will be due beginning in October.
Well, there is still time to sign up for the second annual Oberlin Village Heritage 5K. The event takes place Juneteenth weekend to help raise awareness of the holiday and the history of the state's oldest Freedmen's Village. This year's 5K and Kids Dash take place at Wake Med Soccer Park. Each participant will receive a medal and a T-shirt. And new this year, you can visit the Black-owned business booths and food trucks. WREL is a proud partner.
Next at noon, the FDA is recommending an upgrade to its COVID vaccine, what the administration is targeting and the timeline to put it in place.
Also, Pope Francis is back at the Vatican, how the pontiff looked leaving the hospital after surgery.
Plus, history in Fayetteville at 12:30, how the city is now part of the Civil Rights Trail.
Download the new WRAL streaming apps on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV.
And breaking here in the WREL Live Center, just in the last few minutes, we got word that President Biden appointed Dr. Mandy Cohen as the new director of the Centers for Disease Control. That we've been following this story for quite some time. In making the announcement, the president said Dr. Cohen is one of the nation's top physicians and health leaders with experience leading large and complex organizations. And she's a proven leader and has a proven track record. We all know that during the pandemic, Dr. Mandy Cohen led the Department of Health and Human Services throughout that whole pandemic, and now she will take over the CDC for Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who's stepping down.
And speaking of which, Ken, the FDA must decide now what to include in its next round of booster shots for COVID-19. An advisory panel recommended upgrading the shots to target an updated strain, as well as dropping the original strain from the formula. Kevin Cork explains the timeline for the change.
The COVID-19 vaccines many are familiar with are on track for a recipe remix.
I think what we're being asked is, do we think it should be updated for this fall? And I agree.
The Food and Drug Administration's scientific advisors unanimously recommending Thursday that the next series of shots for the fall should be updated to only include protection against the newest variants.
Updating the vaccine with the monovalent strain makes the most sense. I think the data is quite clear.
The vaccines available today are formulated with the original coronavirus strain. And while they were reformulated to also include protection against earlier versions of the Omicron variant, that strain has also mutated with an Omicron subvariant known as XBB, now the dominant strain.
And I think the evidence is good that the currently circulating XBB is the correct strain to use.
FDA advisors say the next shots should no longer contain the original COVID strain. Instead, health experts are eyeing which XBB sequence the updated vaccines should target. According to the CDC, the XBB 1.5 subvariant now accounts for roughly 40% of new COVID cases in the U.S.
That was Kevin Cork reporting, and the FDA is expected to review the recommendation soon, and then the CDC, under new direction from Mandy Cohen, is scheduled to have its own advisory committee meeting next week.
Good news. Pope Francis is recovering back at the Vatican after being released from the hospital today. The Pope was met by crowds of well-wishers and medical staff who gathered to say goodbye. The Rome bishop spent 9 days hospitalized after having abdominal surgery. The 86-year-old has experienced a series of health issues in recent years. Referees ended a soccer match between the U.S. and Mexico due to homophobic chanting. It happened yesterday in Las Vegas, where the U.S. men's national team beat Mexico 3-0. A combined 13 cards were issued, 12 of them in the second half. The refs called the game 4 minutes early. The CONCACAF Nations League put out a statement saying it strongly condemns the discriminatory chanting.
Stage 6 of the Tour de Suisse was canceled today following a deadly high-speed crash. Swiss cyclist Gino Metter died on during Stage 5 after colliding with an American cyclist named Magnus Sheffield. The crash happened during the descent, sending Metter plummeting into a ravine. 21-year-old Sheffield has a concussion and is being treated at a hospital. A new report shows that a 13th horse died at Churchill Downs. The Kentucky Horse Racing Commission published its review this week about the horse's death back in mid-May. 4-year-old Bosque Redondo was injured while racing during a spring meet. The colt was put down 2 days later due to an unusual fracture in his left forelimb. Now the commission plans to hire a new safety steward to monitor horses in the barns and on the track.
At least three people have been killed and one still missing after a tornado struck a rural North Texas town. Take a look at the destruction here. Hundreds of storms popped up across several states, causing significant damage and leaving more than 100,000 people without power. NBC's Sam Brock shows us the damage in Perryton, Texas.
In Perryton, Texas, population 8,000, the word devastation doesn't even really scratch the surface. I'm standing right now on Main Street, and I don't know what you envision when you think about your downtown area where you live, but it's probably not this. Bricks littering the street. You have plywood that is plastered everywhere, buildings that have been crumpled, and absolute chaos. This right here used to be a gym. Now, gyms, restaurants, bakeries, nail salons, all sorts of businesses have been wiped out. According to the mayor here, he says there have been 30 businesses that have been damaged or destroyed and 100 homes. And when you look at that figure of 100 homes, which could easily be 5 to 10% of the population here, about half of them, he said, are trailers or mobile homes, which is to say that the folks who live there, everything that they had inside of those homes. There is right now a search and rescue effort that is still ongoing. In fact, the Texas Task Force, there are two of them, arrived on scene this morning. I watched as a canine was going all over this rubble looking for signs of life or potentially for victims. Right now, we know there's been about 75 to 100 people injured, a very large number, and those range from minor cuts and bruises to collapsed lungs. You also have three confirmed fatalities at this point, and we know actually just this morning that those include two women in their 60s, as well as an 11-year-old boy who was inside of his trailer when one of these tornadoes struck. So tragic news coming here from the north part of Texas as we wait to learn more about what authorities are going to unearth today as they go through the process of searching all of these lots, all of these damaged areas and broken hearts all through North Texas. Sam Brock, NBC News.
And broken hearts here, too, just to see that destruction. I mean, so many people have lost so much.
Yeah, we'll focus on what we have going on in our area, but also the big picture. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRO Severe Weather Center with that national look.
This is the third day in a row that this area has been hit with really strong to severe thunderstorms. And, of course, the storms up here across Oklahoma, North Texas, Perryton is right here. That has moved out. It's moved down to the south and east. And once again, focused on the Gulf Coast, that's where it's been the last couple of days. We had a number of tornadoes there, dozens and dozens of severe thunderstorm warnings as well. But none of this is headed our way. We're going to see this system up here. See these two low pressure systems? Those are going to swing through cold front. This one in particular, as it moves through, is going to help to bring us a chance for some scattered thunderstorms. We'll zoom in and take a look at Futurecast here. And you can see as we get to, say, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we begin to see a few isolated storms. The cold front will sweep down from the north and bring us the best chance of showers and thunderstorms north and east of the triangle. There are going to be plenty of folks that don't see any of these storms, but if you do see one, we may see some brief gusty winds, some brief heavy rain, possibly some small hail, especially up near the Virginia line. That's where we have our best chance of seeing severe storms. We do still have that level one risk in our northern counties. Again, the biggest threat would be wind damage. A hot one out there. It already feels hot and sticky. 91 the high in Raleigh, 92 in Durham, 92 in Fayetteville. So it's a steamy, sticky day out there. Our dew point at 65 puts us right there at steamy. But once this front comes through, we're actually going to see a drier air mass. It's going to start to come out of the north and west. It'll drop our dew points into the 50s, which will feel comfortable. Now, it's still going to be hot, but it just won't be as oppressive outside as we see drier air moving in. A lot of haze was with us this morning. You can see some lingering haze across the area as we take a live look at the airport. But look at what's happening. Yesterday, we had some fires that started just west of Wilmington down across parts of Brunswick County. That is all beginning to shift off to the south and to the north and east. And it's a code red. So if you're planning to head to the beach this afternoon, this evening, or even tonight, you might run into some of that bad air quality down there. And we're not seeing that at all. We're seeing the yellows and the greens, so we're doing just fine. But that wind is coming out of the southwest, so it's picking up some of that smoke and sending it up to the north and east. But watch what happens overnight and into tomorrow. Our winds shift to northwesterly. That's going to start to push the smoke off. offshore. So even if you're headed to the beach, it should be much better for tomorrow. But what we'll see with a northwesterly wind is some of that smoke from Canada's wildfires swooping in. Now, it's not likely to be anything like what we saw about a week and a half ago. It will bring us to a code yellow for Saturday and Sunday. So we're looking at a moderate air quality, which is not something that will cause major problems for anyone. If you're extremely sensitive, you want to limit your time outside, but everybody else should be just fine over the weekend. It looks nice in the mountains this weekend, 83 in Asheville for tomorrow, mid 70s in Boone, and of course in the 60s in some of the really high elevations. Our beach forecast, temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s, all up and down the coast. Just inland though, it'll be warm in the upper 80s. We do have a moderate and even a high rip current danger. That high rip current danger between Atlantic Beach and Cape Lookout. And of course, we're looking at a fairly quiet weekend here. 88 on Saturday, 91 for Father's Day. We're going to be rain free, and we're looking at a much wetter pattern next week. We'll check that out coming up.
And we're following breaking news here in the WRAL Live Center. Within the last 15 minutes, the gunman who opened fire on a Pittsburgh synagogue found guilty. 50-year-old Robert Bowers was found guilty of dozens of federal charges. The verdict was read in open court in the last 15 minutes. The proceedings are still going on, by the way. Back in 2018, Bowers opened fire on worshipers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, killing 11 people. The trial lasted about a couple weeks. The jury deliberated for about 5 hours. This is considered the deadliest ever attack on Jewish people in the U.S.
All right. Thank you for that update, Ken. An inspector says a child was in a local restaurant kitchen touching food with their bare hands. Five on Your Side has that in this week's restaurant ratings. That's tonight at 5.
And Russian cyber criminals have hit several U.S. government agencies, potentially exposing the private data of people across the country. Today at 4, we look at who could be behind the attacks and what you can do to protect yourself. Meantime, still ahead this noon, Virgin Galactic is ready to launch its commercial tourism service. When monthly flights are expected to begin and how much you can expect to pay.
I'm going to say it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And an interactive smart speaker combines a popular voice assistant with Disney. How you can enjoy the new features.
The Justice Department wants to take a look at the PGA Tour's stunning merger with Saudi-backed LIV Golf. The Justice Department had already been investigating the PGA Tour for allegedly anti-competitive behavior after it prevented players from playing tour events once they joined LIV Golf. The review could delay the merger, but it doesn't mean the merger won't happen. Fox News is reportedly on the verge of settling another major lawsuit, this time with a former producer who worked for hosts Tucker Carlson and Maria Bartiromo. Abby Grossberg claims Fox lawyers coerced her into providing misleading testimony when she was deposed as part of Dominion Voting System's billion-dollar lawsuit. She also says the network did not turn over some evidence related to Dominion's lawsuit. Fox ultimately settled that lawsuit for $787 million.
Oh, we're already getting a good look at this weekend's endless yard sale. Take a look at this video from Sky 5. Sky 5 flew over US 301, where thousands of bargain hunters will be shopping at homes and businesses for the annual sale. The annual event kicked off at 7 this morning, covering more than 100 miles. The route runs through Harnett, Johnston, Wilson, Nash, and Halifax counties. And you can get out and shop for treasures from 7 to 5 today and tomorrow. Uber is going to start showing video ads in the app while you wait for your driver. Uber also plans to install tablets in seat backs to show ads to passengers. The company is expanding video ads for Uber Eats. They'll appear right after you place your order. A key selling point for advertisers is the huge amount of data Uber has on its users, such as the places they visit and what they frequently order on Uber Eats.
Amazon's Echo devices are getting a Disney-themed makeover. The new voice assistant that goes by the name on your screen there at the bottom is now available to Amazon Plus kids subscribers at no extra cost, or you can buy an annual subscription for $6. Now, we're not saying the name because it might activate those devices if you have them. The feature comes with 20 personalities and voices from the world of Disney. The new voice assistant doesn't replace Alexa, but operates as its own voice assistant. Virgin Galactic is launching its first two commercial space flights this summer. Galactic 01 will carry three crew members from the Italian Air Force and the National Research Council on a 3-day mission. The team will conduct research on microgravity. Then in August, Galactic 02 will launch its first private astronaut flight. Each ride will cost about $450,000, and there are already about 800 people on that waiting list.
Wow. Well, just moments ago, leaders unveiled a new civil rights marker in our state. This is a live look right now. We're live with why the site in Fayetteville was chosen as one of 50 designations across North Carolina.
And a new type of personal robot could help prevent workplace injuries. A look at how the technology is being put to use, as well as a look at your winning lottery numbers on your screen right now.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
Just about an hour ago, history was made in Fayetteville. Six decades ago, college students, people who lived there, and black soldiers from what was Fort Bragg marched for civil rights in downtown Fayetteville.
And today, their efforts were honored with a civil rights trail marker placed near the market house where people, where enslaved people were sold. WRAL Fayetteville reporter Gilbert Bays was at this morning's ceremony and spoke with several individuals who marched back in 1963. Must have been so powerful, Gilbert.
Boy, I tell you, Michelle, I didn't know some of the stories, and I knew all those people that spoke this morning, but I didn't know their significance to bringing this marker here. And this marker, the words on this marker here mean something here, but the significance of its location is something else. This used to be City Hall, the old police station, and you can see it's put up, as you mentioned, here in the shadow of the market house where enslaved people were sold. And so those folks who marched, well, they marched to bring desegregation to Fayetteville. Let me take you back. These marches took place in and around downtown Fayetteville. The marchers were demanding businesses provide services to black patrons. Hundreds took part in the protest. Now, the marker highlights how these residents advocated for change during the summer of 1963. It reflects the protest, which was put on political pressure on the elected officials back in that time to direct the Fayetteville businesses to desegregate. And that happened 1 year prior to the 1964 Civil Rights Act being adopted by the federal government. Some of those who marched in 1963 were here in the crowd this morning, and they shared some of the hardships they endured.
I was a student at Fayetteville State, and marching the streets made my feet ache. The firemen used their water hose, the police used smoke bombs, but we were determined and continued to march, singing, "We Shall Overcome."
As Dr. Willis McLeod, former chancellor at FSU, he went on to say that he was arrested five times, and one time he was back in the padded wagon, and he had a police dog, a German Shepherd, sitting beside him, but he was not going to be deterred. This marker is one of 50, as you mentioned, highlighting civil rights trail across the state that led to the desegregation of many of the businesses here in North Carolina. It was made possible by the North Carolina African American Heritage Commission with funding from the W.G. Pomery Foundation. Marker is great, but I tell you what, it was just absolutely fantastic, Michelle, as I mentioned earlier, to sit here and listen to the stories from some of the people who lived that history. Just unbelievable. We're going to have more on some of those folks in later shows today. Great, great event this morning.
Oh, I imagine. Just a memorable day in history. Gilbert Bays live in Fayetteville for us. Thank you so much, Gilbert.
So before that event, this was the latest civil rights trail marker unveiled in our state. Back in April, the Friends of Oberlin Village held a ceremony at the Village District Shopping Center in Raleigh, formerly known as Cameron Village. It honors 41 students from Shaw and St. Augustine's who were arrested during a sit-in at a Woolworths lunch counter in 1960. Charges against the students were later dropped. You can read that full story of that historic protest and its aftermath at WRAL.com.
And happening now in the WRAL Live Center, the NBA announcing that Grizzly star Ja Morant will be losing games into next season because of wielding a weapon on social media. The NBA making that announcement earlier today, suspending the Grizzly star for 25 games. That begins immediately and will remain in effect through the start of the next season. The NBA says Morant must also adhere to certain conditions before being reinstated. Now, additionally, Morant is ineligible to participate in any team activity, including preseason games during the suspension. Now, this is the second time the league suspended Morant for showing a weapon on social media. An incident back in March landed him an 8-game suspension back then. For his part, Morant apologized, saying he plans to be a better representative of the team, the city, and the NBA.
Fire investigators say improperly discarded smoking material caused the fire at an assisted living facility. Sky 5 captured this dramatic scene of smoke coming from the roof at Spring Arbor of Raleigh yesterday. First responders used city buses and other large-sized vehicles to relocate displaced residents around the triangle. Luckily, nobody was hurt. And officials are trying to determine the cause of a house fire that brought more than 40 firefighters to the scene. It happened Thursday evening on Wood Street in Durham. Fire crews say they responded just after 7 o'clock. They say an attack line was deployed and the fire was under control within 10 minutes. The house was under construction at the time. Nobody was inside.
Our county-by-county coverage takes us to Orange and Lee counties. An ATF training exercise is taking place right now in Hillsborough. A federal agency is destroying explosives in its storage facility at Resco Products Quarry off Eno Mountain Road. The site will be limited to ATF participants and Orange Rural Fire Department personnel who will provide a truck there for water if needed. Kayakers in Lee County now have new launching points. These are pictures from the dedication ceremony held at the new 15501 Bridge Kayak Launch. It's on Hawkins Avenue. And another point that you're not seeing here to drop in, pictured at the U.S. 421 Bridge on Lake Boone Trail. Both are along the Deep River in Sanford.
Jobs involving a lot of heavy lifting can come with health risks if you don't move correctly. But in the near future, scientists hope that robot avatars can prevent workplace injuries and keep employees safer. Ashley Strohmeyer takes a closer look.
In the near future, workers in physically demanding fields could have a personal robot do the heavy lifting for them. That's the hope of scientists from the Italian Institute of Technology, who are working on a new type of humanoid called ErgoCub.
The fact that it's shaped as a humanoid is to be able to work in the same space that was already designed for humans.
The robot stands a little over 4 feet tall, but engineers are working on making it strong enough to lift, hold, and carry heavy items, reducing the chances a person will get hurt on the job. Data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics reveals back injuries make up one out of every five workplace injuries.
We redesigned the feet in order to have a better impact with the environment, and we inserted also a new generation of sensors inside the arms of the robot.
Scientists are also incorporating virtual reality into ErgoCub so workers can use VR headsets and gloves to control their robot through more refined tasks.
It has a LiDAR, which allows the robot to scan the surrounding environment. Then there is a camera that can actually perceive also people interacting with the robot. Then there is this OLED, which serves for making the expressions of the robot. And this is fundamental for making the robot acceptable in future work environments.
Wow, that was Ashley Strohmeyer reporting. Until these robots start showing up in factories and warehouses, health experts recommend workers maintain good posture and lift with their legs, not with their back, when picking up heavy items.
Tomorrow, Dix Park will hold the Capital City Juneteenth celebration. There'll be live music, food trucks, inflatable games, a balloon artist, many more activities. The event runs from 1 to 6. WRL is a proud community partner of this event, and anchors Ken Smith and Lena Tillette will be there hosting it. Admission is free.
Coming up, the way you shop for meat in the grocery store could look different soon. What meat producers are required to do before adding the label.
It's something a lot of us can't do without, the internet. But you'll want to limit your time for your mental health. Experts tell us how long we really should be spending surfing the web. Eating your meals earlier in the day might help improve your health. Researchers found eating most of your daily calories in the first 8 hours after waking up could help prevent weight gain and high blood pressure. It could also prevent diabetes and help you keep good metabolic health. Researchers found just 1 week of eating in this time window can reduce unhealthy changes in your blood sugar. The USDA is implementing new labeling requirements. The government says this will give consumers clarity and hold meat and poultry producers more accountable. The move is part of a multi-step effort to strengthen its requirement on animal raising claims. Meat producers will have to get clearance from the Food Safety and Inspection Service before adding labels on raising that make claims like grass-fed or free-range.
Limiting your time on social media platforms can help reduce anxiety and depression. Researchers say limiting time on devices to 30 minutes per day can notably decrease anxiety and depression in young adults. Study participants who followed these guidelines had lower levels of loneliness, depression, and anxiety compared to the ones that did not. They admitted the first few days were challenging, but then they felt more productive during the day. They even slept better. The Coast Guard rescued a German Shepherd after she fell off a cliff at a state park in Oregon. This video is just something to see. The dog fell 300 feet off a cliff in a remote section of Ecola State Park Wednesday night. The area can only be reached by rappelling down from the trail, and that's exactly what the Coast Guard did. They were called in to help, and the crew airlifted the dog and flew it to her owner, who is anxiously waiting in the parking lot. Jeff, you showed us this video this morning. It's just incredible to see because, I mean, pets are family.
Oh, certainly. And we don't know the extent of the injuries, right. But, you know, hopefully she is okay.
Yeah.
Not sure. We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Well, it is high time for golfers. We can definitely tell you that. So we're going to make a visit to Pinehurst next with the U.S. Open in play right now. 1 year from this week, it'll be right down in the Sandhills. And we will talk with the president of Pinehurst Resort when we return.
Plus, it's the big split. Not, they're still together, but the news Harry and Meghan are sharing with the world.
You're looking live at Pinehurst Resort and Country Club, home of the 2024 U.S. Open Championship, as you watch WRL News, available on Hulu and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. The U.S. Open Golf Championship has teed off in Los Angeles for round two already today. What will it hold, as day one was record-setting with two golfers tying for the lowest score ever in a U.S. Open? Ricky Fowler and Xander Schauffele both shot 62 at the L.A. Country Club, and that's saying something for a tournament that started in 1895. Nobody's ever gone that low. This week, next year, the world of golf comes to the American home of golf, Pinehurst, for our nation's championship. And joining us now is the president of Pinehurst Resort, Tom Pashley. Tom, thanks so much for joining us today. You were out there in L.A. Tell me, what were some of your takeaways?
It's hard to believe almost a decade has passed since we last hosted the U.S. Open. And so, yeah, our team typically goes out every U.S. Open. But this year we had even more folks going out because some of our folks weren't here last time we hosted the championship. So we always like to see what's changed. Every year it's small little tweaks and make sure that we're going to be ready when they come here next year. There's a lot of heavy lifting that has been done in Pinehurst over the last 10 years. And so we like to kind of think of this last year as putting some of the polish right before the world comes.
Yeah, and they're coming. Come Monday when this tournament's over, it's your show. And the USGA has a second headquarters in Pinehurst. I know they've been on site already asking you what you will do and what are you going to do for them? What are you offering? What is the USGA asking for you to do?
Yeah, the beauty of Pinehurst number two after the restoration work that we did is that not a lot has to change with the golf course. We're not narrowing fairways. We're not growing up rough. The U.S. Open on Pinehurst is going to be all about Donald Ross's, you know, masterpiece greens. And so the only tweaks we need to do between now and next June is make sure we get those greens nice and firm and nice and fast so that when the players get here, they're going to have a real challenge. And it, you know, Martin Keimer went low in 2014 and kind of ran away with things. And they're going low already this week. We can't wait to see what happens when they come back. The greens are different. The greens last time they were here were bent grass, a little more receptive. Now they're Bermuda. And it can be dialed up even faster.
The golf house construction also, I know that's moving along. I've seen it. Any other notable changes to infrastructure there?
Yeah, when people arrive at Pinehurst, they're going to see a lot of new things. And this golf house Pinehurst and the USGA Welcome Center, in addition to the World Golf Hall of Fame, is going to be relocating here. So those buildings are going to be coming online later this year and early next spring. In addition, we're going to be building a 10th golf course. So there's a lot of things that people are going to see that's new when they come to the U.S. Open next June.
You know, in L.A., they limited the tickets to 22,000 people a day. And I know tickets just became available to the public today for next year. What is your number going to be?
Yeah, in LA it's tight. You know, they're landlocked, and at Pinehurst we have five golf courses starting from our main clubhouse. So we've got the luxury of some space. Typically we'll have around 45,000 spectators per day. I think the USGA might be taking that number down a little bit so that we can provide a wonderful experience to everyone who's here. But it'll be much bigger in Pinehurst than it was in Los Angeles, but maybe a little smaller than 2014.
Well, I know that just getting a U.S. Open into the area means tens of billions of dollars. So it's a big, big deal. We know that. I want to thank you for your time. Can't wait for the months to come. We'll be talking again, no doubt. Appreciate it, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, we got to get over to meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner showing us all around town. A couple clouds in the sky, but no rain yet, Elizabeth.
Not yet, but it is likely on its way, probably by 3 o'clock at the latest. That's when we should start to see some of those thunderstorms bubbling up. We take a look at Goldsboro, definitely seeing the cumulus clouds there. There's a look at our downtown Durham newsroom. And we take a look at Apex. We can see partly cloudy skies and the same thing in Chapel Hill. Early this morning, we were seeing clear conditions, and we're starting to see those clouds build a little bit. Chapel Hill is courtesy of Top of the Hill Restaurant. Here's another look at the big picture. Again, we have some strong thunderstorms that are diving down to the south, but it's this front here that's going to be cruising across our area that will bring us our scattered showers and thunderstorms. The front itself moves through later on this evening. You can see the cells starting to pop up between 2 and 3 o'clock. It's going to be widely scattered. Not everybody's going to see this. We actually have a 40% chance of rain, which means 60% of us may not even see any rain at all. But where we have storms develop, the rain may be briefly heavy, the winds may be gusty, and in some places up to the north and east of the triangle, there could be some winds that reach severe criteria, which would be 58 miles per hour or stronger, or there could be some hail that's quarter sized or larger, and that would qualify as a severe storm. This really begins to die down once we get past sunset. We've had a very small change, it looks like, to our severe threat. Sometimes the Storm Prediction Center tweaks it a little bit. Looks like they took maybe just a little bit out of Person County, but generally it's the same story. It's those northern counties from Person County back over toward Halifax, Northampton County, and then on up toward Mecklenburg County, Virginia. Tomorrow, we have our Capital City Juneteenth celebration at Dix Park. And here at WRL, we are proud community partners. If you're headed out there, you'll see Ken Smith and Lena Tillette, and they'll be there between 1 and 6 o'clock. It is going to be a hot day at 88, but less humid. Once this front moves through, we're going to see a nice drop in our humidity. Good day for Father's Day. It's going to be a hot one, but it is the middle of June, 91. But we'll notice, as we talked about half an hour ago, that we're going to see more comfortable conditions. In terms of our humidity, it should drop nicely. Watching the tropics, we have a wave that's coming off the coast of Africa here, and it's a 50% chance now that it could develop. Now, it may not develop much past a tropical depression because it's going to end up dealing with some of this Saharan dust that comes off the coast of Africa. This is very dry air. That is not conducive to tropical systems. We're also watching the potential on, at least one of the models, that there could be some development here in the Bahamas. It moves off the coast of the United States, but perhaps in another week or so. That's way out in the future, but it's something that we'll have our eye on. Looks like there are a few interesting things happening in the tropics. 91 for the high this afternoon, looking at 88 Saturday, 91 on Sunday. Monday, of course, is Juneteenth, even though a lot of the celebrations will be on Saturday. And then we turn much wetter Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We could see up to 2 inches. We definitely need some rain. We start summer on Wednesday with a high of 77. We'll be right back with your top stories.